Yeah, that's right, everybody. It's Bull Patrol. It's the reality TV wrap-ups podcast about The Mole Season 2. This week, a doubleheader talking episodes 9 and 10. I'm Josh Wigler, and hopping into the big vat of grapes with me, it's Jessica Lease and Brookwood Zed stomp, stomp, stomping away.
So which one of us has the biggest feet?
It's definitely not me.
It's not me. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Allegedly we're hanging out sometime relatively soon. Should we have like a foot size competition? I don't know.
I'm 5'1". I'm a small person with small feet.
I just like how you said that. I'm 5'1".
I do not have size 14s or anything close to it.
I want it on a shirt alongside all of the various and sundry quotables along the way here during this here second season of the Mole Patrol podcast, as we are getting pretty close to the end of the line. And Jess, because we have to take next week off, we did do this doubleheader as advertised last week. And so now I feel like, even if we're not going to be back next week, I just feel like we're so much closer to the finish line. Just there's only 4 people left after this one.
Yeah. But the thing is, Josh, I think we have different ideas of what constitutes like the finish line. Because honestly, for me, there's a different finish line. And then the rest is just sort of like falling action.
Yeah. I sense that I'm there. Or rather close.
So close, man. You're so close. I can taste the foot wine.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, wow. Foot wine. My goodness, by the way. And of course, I, being a man of a certain age who came up on the internet when he did, could not think of anything but the grape stomping lady who fell. And but stop filming. Does everyone know that one?
No.
Are you serious? You guys don't know the grape stomping lady?
I think we are 5 years on either side of you, and neither of us know what you're talking about.
Okay, here we go. Iconic internet video that we have to include this week on Mole Patrol. It is an absolute classic. One might even say a Vlasic, because it should be pickled and preserved for all time. I'm pulling
one might
up.
Say that, but one should maybe choose not to.
Pickles and wine.
Pickles and wine. Okay, so what I have pulled up for Jess and Zed to watch, and I bring this up in case it was like they just listened to the podcast, they're not watching the show. There's a grape stomping challenge this week on the Bowl, where they had to stomp a bunch of grapes in order to create grape juice for wine. And there is this video from the early 2000s that was like one of the viral videos of its moment that involves grape stomping. And it is a reporter who goes to a vineyard of some kind. And apparently the vineyard has a company uniform that is khaki shorts and a baggy yellow t-shirt. And so the reporter goes and is game to wear the yellow shirt and the khaki shorts as well. And they both get up on a platform to stomp on grapes. And the following occurs.
These buckets are filled with grapes. What kind of grapes? These are filled with Chamberson grapes. And the winner this Saturday, who's stomping music, eating international foods, having wine tours and tasting, vineyard tours, seminars, arts and crafts. It's a lot of fun, a whole day. Stop. Oh, I can't breathe. No.
Oh, dear. I think she's actually hurt.
No,
I think.
No, oh, dear.
Josh, was that at 2x?
Yeah, that was so fast.
That was so fast.
Playback speed.
It was at 2x. It was at double X because I got to get us through the podcast. So it's quadruple X for the people at home. So she falls off the thing. She falls off the thing.
Wait, but to be clear, for the people who did not just watch that video, it's not like it is on the show where you're stomping in a vat on the ground. They're for some reason
they're on an elevated platform. Yeah, they're on an elevated platform. she
prepared for that part.
She's like, you know, it's color commentary out there on the field doing some, you know, deep incisive reporting for some kind of morning show. It's a segment, and she's like, you know, trying to be playful. And so she's being shown like this is the process, and she stops everything. She says, wait, stop, as if there's like a problem with the video. She uses this as an opportunity to cheat and stomp on more grapes than the person who works there. And she missteps and she falls off the platform, and the noises are what you hear as a result. Iconic internet video of the early 2000s. I cannot see grape stomping without thinking about it. I'm sure this must have been the case for others.
People will have to sound off in the comments and let us know.
If you can, this is one where I would say at me about it, but don't at me about spoilers about the mole.
You have to. This is like a challenge in and of itself. You have to talk to Josh about the grape lady without using the words mole patrol.
Correct.
Or they won't get to him.
They won't come to me. So like you have to bypass the filters. Can't mention the mole in your tweet. Can't mention the mole patrol in your tweet.
Like password.
Can you just get through talking about the grape stomping lady?
I really feel like there are so few cultural touchstones for stomping on grapes that I don't think I have any other than this one. Like, is there an I Love Lucy about it?
I don't know.
I Love Lucy.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It's basically those things other things.
Yeah.
This is like, as far as grape stomping goes in pop culture, I think this is a Mount Rushmore viral video. It's on there.
I don't know if there's even four heads on that Mount Rushmore.
I don't know. It's a four-toed.
Okay, there's a fourth
statue.
Apparently, this was on The Amazing Race.
Oh, okay. Sure. Okay.
That makes sense.
So they did that on, it's had its moment on reality TV. It was like a classic, like, Ebaum's World type of internet video. This made the rounds once upon a time.
That was what passed for funny on the internet.
Have you ever? Yes, for sure. And I thought it was hilarious.
I mean, it's good. It's good in the same way that, like, it's like a really satisfying guy hitting himself in the nuts with a golf club on America's Funniest Home Videos. But I don't know, Josh. I don't know that I would remember this for 20 years.
I certainly do and never will forget it. So many things have come and gone in my life, but the grape stomping lady is forever. So there's grape stomping in this week's mole. There's another brutal hide and seek game, and there are two eliminations or executions, rather, as we were talking about two different episodes of The Mole. We've got a lot of ground to cover.
We spent 10 minutes talking about grape stomping.
Yeah, I have like a very early appointment tomorrow morning. And before we came on the podcast, I said, Jess and Zed, I'm going to try really hard to like not take us on any tangents so that we can get through the business so that this doesn't go like crazy long. And
how's that working out for you?
Inside of 10 minutes.
Yeah, smash cut to 2 minutes later and you're pulling up a YouTube video from 20 years ago.
Inside of 10 minutes, we're talking about the grape stomping lady and we still haven't talked about Darwin or Bribs or anybody else from the mole. So way to go, Wiggler. You still got it, you big idiot. Oh, man.
Crushing it like some grapes.
My goodness gracious. Zed, take this away before I break something else.
Great. Well, I think the one player we have spoken about is Al, and that is who we start with at the beginning of episode 9. He's just happy to still be here. It is a miracle that he has made it this far. Darwin is suspicious of Al and Bill being so close, and he says there's no honor among thieves. We get a number of comments over the course of these two episodes about people feeling like the game has shifted. Bribs says here he liked the game the way it was and feels like now they have to go more directly after.
What does that mean?
Other.
Is it just because Bribs is such a pure soul that he doesn't like that it's like it's a leaner crew and the stakes are higher? It's getting a little more real, Jess. Is that the problem for poor sweet Bribs? He's just too innocent for this game.
Yeah, maybe he's just a little too pure for it. He strikes me as one of these people from like the early seasons of Survivor that was like, I can't form an alliance. That would just be ignoble.
This dude has like big Dirk Bean energy.
Yes, like, yes. Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Dirk Bean without the creepy religious vibe.
Big Dirk Bean vibes from my boy Bribs.
Yeah.
Dirk Bean, but barbecued ribs.
Ribs.
The game, as it continues to evolve or be the same, but be viewed differently. They are in Italy, in Lucca, on the 28th day of their journey, gathering for breakfast, where they find a clue written in like magazine cutout, kidnapper, ransom note letters. Four more losers. Which will you be? I'm counting down. Dwindling numbers are key. And we see Darwin say, I think it's actually detrimental to try and figure out the clue before the game starts.
Funny coming from the dude who goes home in this round.
Yeah, maybe that strategy is not working out so well.
Like, I mean, like, I kind of get where he's coming from to some extent, where it's like, we're going to overthink this to death and we're probably like going to box ourselves into something bad because every time they give us a clue, we're just terrible at figuring out what the actual thing is. So like, I kind of understand it, but at the same time, like, you do have to try and engage the clue.
They're given to you for a reason.
You must engage it.
That's what a clue is.
That's the clue's for. It's to be engaged.
Remember when people used to cut out letters from magazines? And
remember magazines?
I remember.
Print media's dead.
Like, what would you even do now? Would you like embed it in a TikTok?
Print is dead. It's all online now. It's all grape stomping lady all the time.
It's not journalism. It's content.
It's content.
Oh God.
It's content. Don't get me started. Very triggering.
Same. Hard same.
You're not wrong though. Yeah, and then everyone's just like trying to figure it out. No one can figure it out, and Bill is the last person off the table as he's just slow sipping that coffee. He says, "I did everything in the world I could do with that clue," as evidenced by the fact that he stayed there forever.
All he's got is those dwindling numbers.
Those dwindling numbers—they're key.
Mm-hmm. They are, and they will be, and it will take them an hour and a half to realize that when they get to their task.
Yes.
But first, Anderson's going to visit Bill in his hotel room and explain to him that because he was the last person to leave the breakfast table, he gets to play his own game today, where he has to take a tiny little thumbprint sticker. First of all, I guess not lose the sticker, which seems like a challenge in and of itself, and place it in another player's journal. And if he succeeds, that player will be neutralized, meaning they will not be eligible for any exemptions that may be available. And if he fails to do so, he instead will be neutralized. No one else is going to know about the game. He's not allowed to tell anybody else about the game. If somebody else gets neutralized and they find out about it later, they won't know that he did it.
Ways in which I know that this is the better season of The Mole, of the two seasons of The Mole that Anderson Cooper hosted, is that like by the end of today's discussion, we will be down to four players left in. I really do feel like The Mole could be any one of them, and that includes Bill. And this has been a thing that's been that happened really over the course of this doubleheader for me. Like, Bill's still here. Bill's mm-hmm. still here. And like, he's a psychopath. And like, you don't know like what's going on in his head where Anderson like comes and tells him all of this. And Bill just like kind of just sits there and just like does like the very slow nodding. Like the last thing you ever see before the killer pounces. And like it is completely within reason, as far as I'm concerned, that not only would this man be a true psychopath out there in the wild, but therefore could be the mole. I'm definitely suspicious of Bill, which is not a thing that I felt at all until this week. Of the four people that are there, like, I don't know, like, I feel like there's a pretty good shot that Bill's the mole, which is crazy to me. Absolutely nuts.
It makes me so happy, Josh, that you're not sitting there like, with your mole pick that you picked in episode one.
I'm fully snowed right now. Like
I love it. That's why it's
better.
Yeah,
that
was the idea.
Yeah. That was the idea.
It could be there's an argument for any one of the four right now, I feel like.
And do you think that has to do with the challenges or with editing, or can you assess in any way why it feels so less clear to you this time?
No one has like a big neon glowing sign of I am the mole, unless it's that like all of them do. And I feel like it has been this thing that's been interesting where like as the numbers have like winnowed down, like it has like come to sort of like this inevitable choke point where like these four are all the ones who along the way could have been the mole. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like the next one to go, if it were to go in like the order of like the likeliest to be the mole for me would be like Bill should go at the four. And it should leave like Heather and Dorothy and Al behind. I'm sticking with Al. Like I've made my pick on Al as of a couple of weeks ago. I'm not going to shift again. But I don't know, Zed. Like, I don't know. Last time I just felt like I felt fairly locked into who it was. And this time, like, no one has just like screamed mole. Like everybody, I think that a good amount of it is the editing. I think that they float out a lot of different possibilities along the way here. But a lot of it is also just behavioral. I think like Dorothy has had these moments where she's like had sort of like these clandestine like eureka moments that have been surprising to people. Heather like exudes major redacted vibes. I'm saying redacted for those who just still haven't seen the first season. I could totally see the other side of this if there's a reveal to come. Al is just like the star of the season. And also the fact that like everybody seems to like be really off the scent on Al, that he's just not even a contender for people, makes it feel like a big reversal could be coming. But he was doing things where in the second episode this week where he's like telling I'm up on the turret with everybody could be the mole up here, so no one's staying in one place and I'm going to have them all run around. It's like that's pretty good mole behavior if you're the mole. And then like Bill's just like gonna paw like the giant grizzly bear the tether ball later. Like, you know, like this dude's a psychopath. Like there's a lot of possibility with all four of the ones who are remaining after this week. And like the trail had gone cold on Bribs. Like it was clearly not Bribs for a while there. And I think like Darwin was like in the mix for it, but I think like Darwin was so locked in that to me like he read as like a really really strong player and not necessarily the candidate. But the thing about Bill, I know that like we're kind of like again like sidebarring here, but like the thing about Bill is like I don't see him as somebody who is like supremely socially aware and socially savvy enough that he would be doing well in these quizzes without being the mole. You know, like the further he goes along, it's like you're squeezing the toothpaste from the bottom of the tube. Like it's like, oh well, thanks for the boost. You know, like he's not doing this on his own. I'm sticking with Al, but I'm really starting to think Bill might be the guy.
So your main suspicion of Bill is that it doesn't make sense that he shouldn't be here
anymore. He shouldn't be here anymore.
Okay.
He shouldn't be here anymore. He should be gone. Noted. He should be gone.
Okay. Well, Bill, possibly the mole, and some of his friends are going to go do the car game because Anderson pulls up in a green Citroen, apparently, is what this car is called. I don't know a whole lot about cars. If you told me, here's a car, take it apart, I would not know where to begin.
Isn't Citroen literally like the French word for lemon?
Something like that, yeah. I think so.
Tasty.
I speak Spanish, and I speak enough Spanish to know that when they say in the subtitles they're speaking Italian, they're not speaking Italian, they're speaking Spanish.
Amazing.
Anderson asks for two players who like to drink wine, which ends up being Al and Heather, and then the remaining four players, Bill, Darwin, Bribs, and Dorothy, are left to do the task of get the car into the greenhouse in the next 2.5 hours, but the door on the greenhouse is locked. Good luck. They cannot damage the doors or the building of the greenhouse, and the car has to be inside the greenhouse and able to start when Anderson returns. They're not allowed to check and see if it starts. Only he can do it, except when they actually get there, some other person who we don't talk about starts the car. It's not Anderson.
So
definitely not Anderson. Not even if you're watching this on a 2002 TV.
He's wearing a different colored shirt. He looks nothing like him.
Even if we were watching like the shitty YouTube links before season 2 of The Mole came on to Netflix,
we would know.
So my question is, with this challenge, there's the locked door. They end up figuring out the combo because it's on the car. Like the numbers were there and they just have to reverse them. If they had like opened those doors, would they have just been able to push the car in? Did they have
fundamentally, that's what they did. They just took the car apart and put it back together
They have to take the car apart?
No.
So these people just were able to take a car apart and put it back together in 2.5 hours?
Yeah.
I mean, we are all New Yorkers who do not own cars, but maybe this is a thing people that own cars can do.
Josh, now, you own a car.
Listen, I do, but you all out there should not be surprised to know that this is Martian to me.
Wait, you own a car, Josh?
I have a car, yeah.
When are we going to Costco?
Ooh, well, it's a funny thing about my car. I don't own it anymore.
Wow, a level of friendship has just been delineated.
I see where I stand.
I don't know what happened. You don't know. What if I had a traumatic experience at Costco? I didn't. I just don't really want to drive anywhere now.
It's just the thing you always say to people when you find out they live in New York City and they have a car.
They disassembled the car and reassembled the car in 2.5 hours is nuts.
Also, they were going to split it in half. Is this a thing that you can do with most cars?
They didn't even have the blowtorch. I've seen Tough as Nails. I know what you need to split a car.
I don't know anything about this, but when they've taken most of the car apart and basically have the engine and the frame, and they're like, oh, we're not going to be able to split this car in two. I'm like, what are you talking about?
This would be one of those moments where they're like, Josh didn't do anything on this challenge, did he? But I don't think he's the mole. I just think he's soft.
That's exactly what Phil would say.
Well,
this is like an escape room, really. It's like they put the clue in front of you.
With one step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like one of those escape rooms where you go in and they have the clue for you, but then you just like smash up the rest of the room because you don't see the clue.
Right. Yeah. So while that's happening, Anderson Cooper is getting drunk with the contestants.
Yes.
Yes, he is.
An iconic scene.
Yes.
That's why he wasn't allowed to start the car.
Yeah.
No drunk driving.
No, that's a good point because he's getting schlicked. He is going all the way. Those sheets, they're in the wind.
And in contrast to some of the other episodes where they try and act like the challenges are happening at the same time, in this episode, he is at least wearing the same shirt in both challenge locations. So it would seem that they happened on the same day, perhaps even simultaneously.
But they have to like stomp on some grapes and create a certain amount of juice in a certain amount of time in order to make money. And it seems like they do it pretty easily, right? They're like literally Al's just like hopping around.
He's doing the running man. He's dancing. They have 90 minutes and they do it in like half an hour.
Yeah. And so they burn like a full hour just getting crunk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to point something out. Like we spoke at the top of the episode about Amazing Race had this challenge. Amazing Race directly ripped this challenge off from The Mole, right down to how many bottles you had to fill with your feet.
Yeah.
I see you, Amazing Race.
Yeah.
I just want that noted.
Yeah. They didn't account for The Mole going to Netflix. You know, you never can.
They thought it was gone, destroyed in a warehouse fire. It was not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've earned $10,000. Alice had somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 glasses of wine
they say
in an hour and a half.
Seven glasses of wine over an hour, and Heather has four. You know, four is a lot.
Like, four is a lot.
That's more than a bottle, isn't it?
It's about a bottle, depending on the pour, I think. Yeah.
I do not. I am not a wine drinker.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's like it's close enough to a bottle. It's like either a little bit above or a little bit below a full bottle, four glasses. Like, you're in there. You're drinking.
Well, yeah. One piece of information I did learn about this season after the fact through additional research that we'll probably have to talk about after the series ends is that there was one night when the cast and crew went through 35 bottles of wine.
Whoa.
Yeah. I don't know how big the crew is, but that still seems like a lot.
I just love. So there's this moment where Anderson's like, all right, well, here's the deal. So I want you guys to pour some wine in this tower of glasses. And I want you to take the tower of glasses one hand. I want you to bring it over there. And if you do that trip, a single trip, I'll give you $10,000. I'm like, Anderson, are you all right? It's like, I'm fine.
I was a waiter in New York. I'm great.
Yeah, and he's like Al drips as soon as he pours it, and just like, you lose. And Al's like, what? I bet we didn't even start. He's like, yeah, dripped. And Al's like, but who's gonna like drip? Who's not gonna?
He's like,
drip,
I've never done it sober without getting a drip off the lip.
Yeah, and Anderson's like, shut up, Al. Move, step aside. Let me show you how it's done. And then Anderson like pours the bottle onto the table. And they're like, Anderson, are you okay? He's like, I'm fine.
Yeah, he like cartoon shoves Al out of the way. Like, let me show you how a professional does it.
You know, he's like, Anderson, are you even able to like offer us money for this right now?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm the host. I don't care. I'm leaving after the season anyway.
I was going to ask, what are the odds that Anderson just made that up on the spot?
I'm leaving anyway.
Yeah.
Like one of the producers like, Anderson, just like, shut up, Phil.
Shut up. No, listen.
I'm doing it. I'm telling them $10,000. You can take it out of my check.
He's Gloria Vanderbilt's son. He doesn't need the money.
I love the three of them in this. I love this crew of Anderson, Al, and Heather getting blitzed on the mole.
It's one of my favorite moments.
Yeah, it is
not the moment we keep alluding to, but it is one of my favorites.
Yeah. This is top five for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. He's like, I've been getting drunk with you guys. He calls Al unruly.
It's amazing. It's incredible.
And Al is just so thrilled that Anderson can't do it either.
He loves it.
If you could teleport yourself across space and time to any reality show challenge, I feel like this has to be up there.
It's on the list. This is really fun. And also, it's so scenic. Mm-hmm. Tuscany is amazing. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's a great moment. It's a really great moment. It was super, super fun. Also, I love the return of Mary Had a Little Lamb in the background. like, all right, so now you got to convince your friends to drink your toe jam. And if you do, it will give you more money. And they're like, Anderson, I really don't think you could offer. Shut up. I'm offering it.
They lost it before. It's just the same money they already would have had.
Yeah, there's a producer that literally like, Anderson, can I talk to you for a second? It's like, we can't have them drink foot wine.
No.
Like, shut up. We're doing it.
I wonder if he was still drunk at the point where he gave them $100,000 later.
Yeah, he gives them so much money. They're like, Anderson, no, it's like, fire me then. They're like, we don't want to. It's like, you're going to have to do it.
Yeah, this is an excessive amount of money at that point.
This is why he was not asked back.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to leave. You're going to have to push me out.
Yeah, so Heather and Anderson and Al are all getting drunk in the vineyard while Bill and Bribs and Darwin are taking apart a car, and Dorothy is eventually working on this combination lock that Darwin has discovered. Because Anderson said that one of the doors is locked, and I guess they just assumed it was a lock that would require a key, and nobody bothered to look at the doors any further. Until halfway through, Darwin's like, oh, there's a combination lock. Oh, remember that dwindling numbers thing? Maybe we should figure this out. And Bruce is like, so we should put this car back together, right?
Yeah.
Dorothy said earlier, this made me laugh, although I'm not mechanically inclined, I thought it would be fun to take something apart and put it back together again. Just not the point of the challenge. As you were asking earlier, taking apart the car is not required.
It's not on the syllabus. That's hilarious. It's just so funny. So it's later that night where like Al and Heather have to like conspire, like, all right, so how are we going to do this? How are we going to convince everybody to drink the fruits of our feet?
As they're walking back to dinner, still holding additional glasses of wine. They've left the challenge, but the wine is coming with them.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you?
It's really no surprise that like this whole thing goes down and then they're going to have the stay up all night challenge. And then like the next, when that's done, then you don't see them again until like clearly
the next night.
Yeah. I feel like that's as much for Anderson as it is for anybody else.
Yeah. Yep. Al later is great. He's like, you're going to give me 10 glasses of wine and then send me to bed and then make me get up again in like 2 hours. No way, man.
Yeah, it's great. They're not allowed to tell anyone that there's money on the line, that they're like, and so like they, I don't know if they do this one well. Where they're at the dinner table and like, yeah, well, so we lost the stuff. We had to do a bet. And we would really appreciate it if you drank.
I thought it was for as drunk as he was, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, but then everyone's like, oh no, there's an exemption. We can't trust this.
It's an understandable suspicion, I feel like.
Yeah. It's like they're playing a quick game of charades here, Jess, is like kind of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, sloppy drunk charades.
Yeah. Except only the people, only two of the people are drunk. Three if you count Anderson.
Yeah. We're saying we with six E's, not we with two E's. Yeah.
Not we with four E's either.
Yeah. And so like there's a lot of like, I don't know about that. Dorothy's like, I don't want to drink it. And Darwin's going to convince her to do it because everyone has to take a sip, right? Like everyone has to participate.
And then they have to finish the bottle. Someone has to finish the bottle.
Yeah. Yes. Man, rough exit for Darwin. It just drinks like he drinks like most of that foot juice to the face and then he gets kicked out. That sucks. Yep. Tough final 24 hours. In the
game. Yeah, it is tough when you take one for the team in a big way and then you go out.
Yeah.
It is unfortunate.
It's gross. Yeah. It's gross. But they do it, so they get $10,000 back. Mm-hmm. Hip, hip, hooroo.
Yep.
Yes. And with that, and I think it was the $20,000 that they earned from the car game. That's a $30,000 day. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Because Dorothy figures out the combination to the lock, not from the odometer where the answer is sitting right in front of them, but because there's currently six people left and there will eventually be three people left. So maybe it's those numbers and then maybe it's those numbers backwards. And somehow that is the correct answer. And then later Bill spots the odometer after they've already solved the game.
Right. Right.
But so they've got their $30,000 today. Darwin says the juice doesn't taste like feet. So good enough. And now we have the post-dinner reveal of the thumbprint sticker in Dorothy's journal.
Right, which we know is from Bill, but Bill is told that he can't tell anyone. But we'll later learn that Dorothy suspects it's Bill because there's a thin single strand of silver hair, which is horrifying.
Well, he probably had it like on his arm or something while he was waiting to dispense the sticker.
Come on. You know, I mean, he meant it. You know, he meant to leave.
Oh, you think he left it as like a calling card?
It's a calling card. Yeah. 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 The silver strand.
Gross.
Yeah, I know.
So you're saying he's like sitting there like pluck and.
Yes.
Like sealing wax.
Like a psycho?
Yes, like a psycho! My God.
He's like,
my
Anderson, God. Can I leave a note too while I'm sticking the sticker in here?
Uh-huh.
Like, dear Dorothy, I left a sticker in your journal. It was me, love, Bill.
Yeah.
XOXO.
Yeah. So Dorothy's been neutralized.
Yeah. Al is shocked because the journals are sacred. And Dorothy vows to never leave her journal unattended again. And then soon after this, the players have gone to bed, but Anderson comes to visit their rooms. And Darwin here has a great joke.
This killed me.
Remarkably not homophobic for the year 2001. He says it's odd because usually when Anderson comes to my room, he's not wearing a suit. It's just pajamas. Usually just the bottom.
I love the mental picture of like, Darwin, are you up? Like, what's wrong, Anderson? I can't sleep. You know, you want to hang out?
It's remarkably wholesome, isn't it?
So wholesome.
It's great.
So wholesome. I love it. I really do. That killed me.
Darwin also was very comfortable, you know, sharing the bed with Al as they were commiserating over who they thought the mole might be. So he's just a man who's comfortable.
It's great.
I appreciate
that. I love that.
Yeah, it's super fun. So now they have to play a game where you have to keep a tether ball in perpetual motion until 6 a.m. And you have to do it all in the same order. You have to determine an order. If you hit out of order or if you're hit by the ball, then it's over. My gut instinct was like, this is hard. And then when I found out that it started at like 1 a.m.
Yeah, little after midnight.
Scrap it. There's no way. There was just no chance. Not a shot in hell that they're making it 5 hours doing this thing.
Yeah. Even in the middle of the day, that would be a challenge. Never mind on like 2 hours of sleep in the middle of the night when some of you were drinking heavily just hours earlier.
A solid third of the team.
I kind of feel like the correct answer here is to just do the bill move, but do it at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, just step into the bill.
We're all noping out of this. We need to go get some sleep.
Yes. Oh, what? It wasn't my turn? Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry. Going back to bed now.
Because did they lose anything? Or is
only
it just
the potential money that they would have earned?
Yeah. You know what?
But there was no penalty for just calling it quits.
Yeah. Keep it.
Yeah.
Keep it. It's not worth
because
it.
Because think about trying to like strategize and keep track of all these things and taking all your notes. And it's like a very mentally taxing game and trying to do that when you haven't slept all night.
Keep it. It's a bad idea. End it immediately. I totally agree. End it instantly. Go back to bed. Go back to sleep for sure. But then I think, Zed, to your point of like, now things that you're going to have to track and you're complicating the quiz and like all of this different stuff. This is so hard and you're making things so much harder on yourself. And then who knows what's coming tomorrow? Go get some sleep. Go back to bed.
Yeah.
How much was this worth? Did we?
$30,000.
It's a handsome chunk of change, but they're never getting it ever. Yeah.
It's one of the impossible games.
It's a mirage. It's a fantasy. Yeah. It's not like real.
We have to promise you that you might earn $1 million. So here's one of these things we put in to pad it out that we're never going to actually give you this chunk of it.
I love when who is the most tired? I was like, I'm most tired I've ever been. And he goes to sleep. And like, who's second most tired? I was like, I'm really tired too. I want to go to bed. And let them go to bed. Who's third most tired? Bill's like, it's definitely me. Look at me.
Well, interestingly, I think other people say that first.
Yeah.
Because people have observed, you know, Darwin's getting up and running around and like trying to almost get hit by the ball and keep running. Bill's flat on his back on the floor, like probably on the brink of falling asleep if people don't like make him pay attention.
Yeah. So he gets offered the exemption and then he just like bare paws the ball. It's like, let's go home.
Heather very wisely noted before the game started. She's like, I think there's going to be an exemption in play since Dorothy was neutralized, because that would be irrelevant if there weren't an exemption up for grabs.
That would be the greatest though. Like, what if you had this whole thing around, you can't have an exemption this round, and like, surprise, nobody can have an exemption this round. That would be great.
And as it turned out, that's what happened.
Such a troll move.
Yeah. Cause Bill gets it, but then, is it Dorothy, Darwin and Bribs afterwards? Like, we got to tell Anderson to review the tape. such a punk move, but I get it. But it's such a punk move.
Well, it's a punk move for two reasons. One, it screws over Bill and his exemption. And two, think about the poor PA that has to watch the frickin' tape.
Yeah.
That's just mean. Well,
but I think because Bribs says, he's like, no, when this came up and it was a possibility that he was going to take it, I just like aborted the mission instantly before he could make that decision. Because then hopefully that way nobody gets it. And in that case, all you have to do is tell them, watch the last, you know, 5 or 10 minutes or whatever. I don't know who decided they were going to watch it from the beginning, or maybe they saw it as it was happening and just didn't do anything about it. But I think Bribs takes a pretty good calculated risk here of, well, better that nobody has an exemption than that one person has it if that person is not me.
100%. Punk move, but like the right thing to do.
Yeah. He's out of line, but he's right.
Yes, correct. And then like Darwin had already like screwed things up earlier, but everyone's like, whoa, Darwin's super sus. He's like, I swear to God, I didn't mean to do it. I believe it based on what happens next.
Yeah, it is a weird move, but obviously not an intentionally mole sabotage move.
I also love when Anderson, like, he like, I feel like now Anderson is like, he's like being like an angry drunk. He's like, so Bribs, what happened to your morals? What happened to your ethics? Do you feel like you're still playing with your moral code? And Bribs like, Anderson, what the hell? And then Anderson like kind of like blinks and like shakes his head. It's like, I'm so sorry. I don't know what just came over me.
I don't know who that was.
I don't know who that was, but I'm back. It's me now, Anderson.
Dark Anderson has gone away.
Yeah.
Until he's standing in that green spotlight in the
catacombs. Oh my God, that was so messed up.
Yeah. Right. I mean, like, yada, yada, yada. They do the quiz. Dorothy suspects Bill put the thumbprint on because of the little white hair.
Mm-hmm. Al thinks Dorothy did it to herself, which I don't quite follow.
Yeah. But then they go into the catacombs of Luca. Anderson's like, we thought this would be an appropriate place to do it. It's like,
yes.
What made you think that?
I mean, it's better than the place where they used to have like the prisoners' heads on spikes and they put Rudy's head on a spike.
My God.
Okay. Yeah. Justice for Rudy, man.
Yeah. And down here is where the rest of Rudy is.
Will lie forever.
Yeah, but it's like, of course, that's the perfect space because it's large and cavernous and they have a lot of electrical outlets. Because we have to plug in all of those cords on those monitors and wheel in the AV card.
And the laptop and the screen.
This laptop that weighs 43 pounds.
We're bringing that to the catacombs.
Then Anderson's going to type with two fingers.
And a little like 23-pin cables.
We don't talk nearly enough about Anderson Cooper hunting and pecking. It's just delightful.
You'd think they would teach this at Yale.
It's so endearing. It's so endearing.
Even when we know he's last, like he's the last name to come up, and it could just skip it. And
yeah, Darwin's like,
it's you.
Do you have to do it? He's like, no, it is. There is a process to this.
Enter. Oh,
D. Oh no, that's Q. Sorry, I got a
backspace.
No, I went too far.
Are we sure he's not still drunk?
Yeah.
This is like a full 24 hours later.
Yeah, he could have kept the party going.
Yeah, something changed that
day.
Some
more wine at tonight's dinner. Yeah.
So Darwin is eliminated. There's no drama in it anymore because he's the only name that hasn't been read, and he's going to by default be read. But it's a bummer. I really liked Darwin a lot. I was sad to see him go here. I really thought it would be Bribs at this point, but no, we are still an episode shy from Bribs. I thought Darwin had like the potential to win this whole thing. He seemed like he really had his fingers on the pulse of a lot of this for much of the game.
He was very bright. I have one more thing I want to add about this episode. And I was texting Zed while this was happening. I happened to be watching this episode with my 4-year-old. Which he doesn't really put up with a lot of that. But he happened to wake up while I was watching it, and he comes in and he starts watching it. For all of you that said the mole didn't catch on because it was too complicated and people didn't understand how the game worked, My 4-year-old sat down and watched 5 minutes of this show and understood immediately what was going on.
I believe it.
He said, which one of them is the imposter? And I said, well, I don't know, George, which one do you think is the imposter? And he points at Darwin and he said, I think it's that guy.
Yeah.
And so at least he didn't like put his finger on the person who was actually the mole. And then I could hold that over your head, Josh.
Yeah.
But
he's like, I caught the Darwin
Among Us
venting.
Generation. They yeah. get it.
The Among Us generation totally gets this.
I caught him venting in the catacombs. Unbelievable.
Faking tasks.
Yeah. Yep. Faking tasks. All right. Sorry, Darwin. Yeah. There is like a great through line of like, you know, if Darwin made it to the end of a very Darwinian victory, like, you know, but we are where we are. Okay. Episode 10.
Yes. We continue on without Darwin, who is perhaps still waiting for Anderson to show up in his pajamas. Dorothy is. We get this confessional now from Dorothy that she's bummed there's only two girls left, although that was true last episode as well. Bill is tired of not being in control. Heather says it's a game of observation, and only observation and an exemption will get her through. And Bribs is trying to stick to his boundaries and his morals, but maybe it's time to play a little differently. And I don't know. More directly target someone. I can't really tell. Al's going to say a little later, with only 5 players left in the game, everyone's playing the game harder. And later we'll say an exemption at this point in the game, that's a free pass to the next round, which is what an exemption always is.
It's always been.
Yeah. Did the definition change?
No.
No.
Did not.
Look at all these silly people getting henna tattoos.
Yeah, in Rome, you know, a place known for
the henna tattoos.
Henna tattoos.
Yeah.
Love that tribal armband, Bill. Like
so
a
cool.
psycho.
Look.
You know who gets those tattoos? Psychos.
Listen,
they were very cool 20 years ago.
No, they weren't. They were not cool then.
Listen,
I was alive 20 years ago. They were not cool.
Listen,
yes,
to
Joshua.
Me. When I tell you, I screamed watching this henna barbed wire wrapped around Bill's beefy arm. I was just like, oh shit, he's gonna kill someone. That guy might be the mole. Like, that guy is gonna, like, you know, like where you have like the mom tattoo if you're a real badass. Mm-hmm. But his will say mole. My God, I'm rooting for it so hard. I'm rooting for Bill as the mole more than I rooted for the self-loathing mole last time. This was just like, I would laugh. I'm going to, if it's Bill, I'm going to laugh so hard for so long. Sustained laughter. You're going to have to peel me off of my chair. It's not going to be good.
Your chair.
My chair. You're going to have to peel me off my chair. I'm going to be stuck here still on Wednesday.
Do you think when Dorothy said, after she gets her head a tattoo, she's like, you know, not the barbed wire I was going to get. Do you think Bill got it and said, no, only I can have this? Or do you think she's making
yes.
fun of Bill?
No, I think Bill said, this one's mine, Dorothy. And like, as like the henna tattoo is being applied, for like the 7 hours it took to install, he just like locked eyes on Dorothy the entire time, unblinking. It's terror. It's a nightmare creature known as Bill.
She said in the previous episode, in reference to the exemption, if I can't have it, no one else can have it. That's
unbelievable.
That's Bill's attitude with the head of tattoo.
So they go to this other town. What's the name of this town?
I wrote it down.
L'Aquila.
Oh, I didn't write that down.
They go to this small town. They need 2 players who want to shop. And it quickly falls on Heather and Dorothy. And Anderson is just on fire.
Yeah.
Like,
so
I really love how we're redefining gender roles here on the mall.
20 years ago, a man ahead of his time.
Exceptional.
It's so not funny. So much that the women want to shop as that the men don't want to be seen wanting to shop. I think.
So ridiculous.
Toxic masculinity hurts us all. Yeah.
So bad. It's so bad. So they have an hour to buy 10 things on a, I don't know. I didn't write down how much money they had to work.
It's $100 US dollars, which is 200,000 lira.
Yeah. They did pretty well with $100 US dollars, I feel like. They got a bunch of axes and stuff.
Yeah. The men did terribly here. I didn't think about this the last time I watched this episode. They sold two brand new pairs of shoes and couldn't make $100 US dollars.
It was there's...
They didn't even make $50.
They did remarkably poorly here. They did really, really horribly. Al trying to like sell the kissing booth. Bill's like, let me try. No. Al also has this crazy line where it's like, what are you doing buying eggplants? No one in Italy uses an eggplant. Like, what are you talking about?
Eggplant Parmesan is what I get myself on my birthday every year.
I feel like an eggplant, eggplant is it's a nightshade. This is a staple. What are you talking about?
Everything's made with tomatoes. Okay. And it's not just tomatoes.
Yeah, there's eggplant. There's other vegetables. Yeah.
Eggplant rollatini.
Yeah, ever heard of it?
Podcast always makes me hungry at like late night on a Monday. Well,
and we haven't had one of those episodes where Josh can comment on whatever they're eating at dinner. Yeah, we haven't had that in a long time.
And let me just say, I'm not done.
Please go on.
Well, we'll get there. So they like they also have the dude who leaves the money, and like at this point they're like, oh, we got to give that back. That's a test.
Yeah. This guy put a Romeo and Juliet down on the table and then he walked away and suspiciously left several large bills sitting in
front
of him.
That wasn't even several large bills, though. It was like 10 bucks.
Yeah, 20,000 lira. Yeah, which is like $10.
But also, who carries around a copy of Romeo and Juliet?
Mm-hmm. And then Anderson's like, you could have kept that money for profit. No, they were so, that was so late in the game and they were so far away. That $10 was not pushing them.
No, it's not helping them.
Meanwhile, final two deal between Heather and Dorothy is starting to take shape. This is what we've all been saying. This is why we're always so afraid of it. The men. It's the Women's Alliance.
Yes. How many years before Micronesia?
It's real. It's that darn Women's Alliance again. Can't trust it.
Yeah, the OG Women's Alliance, really. Heather and Dorothy. Before Parvati and Amanda, there was Dorothy and Heather.
Heather and Dorothy walked so Parvati and Amanda could run.
Totally.
Al has said all they need to say is, I need to sell these items, please buy, in Italian, and that's going to get them through. Meanwhile, Dorothy and Heather are having these like serious strategic conversations. And they're like, oh, we would have been so much better at selling this stuff. And the men are down there being like, oh, the women would have been so much better at selling this stuff.
Cheeky Anderson rolls up to them at the end as the bells are tolling in the background. Ask not for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for you.
A line from Romeo and Juliet.
He says, I don't think there's a future in sales for any of you guys.
And Al's like, I sold the wire brush.
Bill takes the opportunity. Bill takes this as an opportunity to drag his own mother. He says, some of the junk that the ladies bought, I couldn't sell to my mother. And my mother loves a bargain.
Such a wild thing to say.
Unbelievable specimen of humanity. Show him to the aliens. Show this one to the aliens. They need to know. They should have Bill as a data point if they're going to properly evaluate us.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
Yikes. All right, hide and seek in Santo Stefano.
Yeah, so it's later that day. They didn't win the $30,000 they would have gotten if they had managed to make a profit at the market, but they did get $10,000 for giving the money back to the, for giving the $10 back to the man, which is a pretty good return on their non-investment, I think. Now they're in Santo Stefano on a little hilltop, with narrow streets, Anderson wants you to know. on a 17th century tower. And we're going to play a sort of complicated hide and seek game where we have an evader, a tracker, and three lookouts.
This is kind of fun. Like, this is like one of those things where, like, this is what you hope you get assigned to you when you're on a show like this, is like, let me run all over like a tiny like fortress city in Europe, playing hide and seek effectively. And I'm an adult and I have like a reasonable excuse to do this. Amazing.
Yeah, this is like an elevated version of the sniper game from season one, almost, where like, it's not like a film set. It's like fully a town.
It's cool. It's really neat.
Well, you know that sometimes you can buy a whole ass town in Italy. Like, they have all these old like medieval towns. You can buy the entire thing. If I win the lottery, maybe I just buy the town and I can just play the sniper game whenever I want.
That's a good idea. That's a strong use of those funds.
For sure.
Yeah.
I could end world hunger, but I could also have a sniper town.
Putting the word fun in funds, you go, is a literal fun castle.
Mm-hmm.
I like that idea. I think that's great.
A veritable fun house, if you will.
One might. This looks like a ton of fun. Heather is the evader. She has to get the green thumbprints, five of them, and she gets an exemption. And then Al is elected tracker because he's the person they suspect the least as the mole. Again, this is just like a data point for me of Al on his journey towards being revealed as the mole, potentially. Also, that Heather is the one who everybody wants to win the most, if not themselves. Good for Heather. That's great. Strong social game there.
For what it's worth, yeah.
For whatever it's worth. She does pretty poorly on this first round. It's over in 5 minutes.
Yeah, so she can hear. There's three lookouts up on the tower. And they have to spot her before the tracker can start moving. And she's able to hear their communication via walkie-talkie, but they don't know that she's listening in on them, I think. She's able to get, I think, three thumbprints the first time. And Al doesn't even start moving right away. Bill is calling down that they've seen her, but Al doesn't hear, or Bill doesn't come through, or whatever it is. But he takes off. And with his size 14 feet and his height, he is able to catch her very quickly.
Yeah. She's upset.
And she's really, really disappointed. But the group has gotten $50,000 from the pot for the pot in 5 minutes.
Is a pretty lucrative 5 minutes.
Yeah. It's even better than getting $10,000 for $10.
Slightly. Yeah. Marginally. But yeah, she's upset and Al feels bad. And then I feel like it's like, well, we really aren't going to let Heather get an exemption here. Why don't we do it again? She's going to win the second time. Let's do this again. Like, we'll put it out. We'll put it out. So they like present to the group, like, you can double your money, but Heather has to run again. And like they're like, okay, yeah, everyone's fine with that. And I'll tell you, I really thought she had it. I really did.
She was so close.
She was like running the clock. She's like making them sweat. 12 minutes pass before she makes her first move. And then Bribs, he's got to be honorable and truthful to the code. And he hunts her down and he's able to. He tracks her down. He's able to get her right before she's right there. It was brutal. I felt awful for her. I felt terrible for Heather.
Yeah. And she's wanted an exemption so badly this whole time. It's like a running through line of the season. She hasn't had one and she really, really wants one. And she gets so close, especially the second time. And she says at one point, you know, I think people were willing to try again because they didn't think I could do it.
Yeah.
So like that the risk level was low and they just earned the money. Although a number of people also say they're confident enough that they're not worried about two people having exemptions. When if you consider the fact that potentially neither of those people is the mole, that could be three people without exemption mm-hmm. with exemptions, meaning you have a 1 in 2 chance of going home if that were to be the case. So that's an awful lot of confidence coming from a couple of the players.
Yeah. And there is like this, like, are they doing this because they don't have faith in Heather being able to do it? Like, it's, yeah, this is mean.
It's a lot of money. $50,000 yeah. in the pot in one shot when they were so successful the first time. It's probably pretty hard to turn that down.
It pays off. They make $110,000 in a single day. Have you ever?
I was like, yeah, it gets a little boring after a while.
Yeah, and I mean, it's worth noting that, you know, this is episode 10. And they're just under 500K.
Yeah.
So that means they've put 20% of their entire pot they earned in this one episode.
Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It is a little bit like production was like, all right, I feel bad for you guys. You need some money.
It's so much money.
Yes.
So much money. And so we are still sans exception for Heather, but we are now plus $110,000 to the group pot. Boys go to sleep. we tired. They go to bed. Heather and Dorothy stay up talking strategy. So I like them as a pair. This is good. What else is going down? Oh, well, then they have dinner, and this is the thing. Al for dinner eats an entire charcuterie plate to the face. So there, you're looking at the table, and he's sitting at the head and sitting in front of him, and it's not like it's there as part of the pass around. Get a little bit of your salami and cheese and fruit and put it on your plate and then pass it to Bribs. No, it's parked. It's parked right in front of him, and he's having charcuterie for dinner, just like a thick plate of charcuterie.
That's the dream, honestly.
I mean, it is baller beyond belief. Are you kidding me?
I went through a phase where that was all I ate.
It's such a mood. Charcuterie for dinner is a whole ass vibe.
That was like summer 2012 for me.
Incredible.
Like, yeah, I just like bring home like fruit and cheese and crackers. I mean, that's all you need.
It's you look back, there's like a lot of meat on that plate.
Italian salami. They're known for their like cured meats or something.
One of those things where everyone sat down and they're ordering dinner and they're going around the table and some people are probably hemming and hawing like, I don't know, I'll have this pasta dish. It sounds kind of good, but I also kind of want the salmon because I should be eating something a little healthier. And like, there's like a lot of deliberation. And then they get to Al. He's like, I'll have the charcuterie plate. And everyone at the table just explodes like, whoa, like, Al, you're blowing my mind. You mean like to split? He's like, no, for dinner.
And he's like, I'm not paying for it. Somebody else is paying for it.
This is on the production budget's dime. Plunk that down in front of me.
Yeah, and I'll have two desserts as well.
Yeah, Bill has already ordered at this point. He's regretting his choices. He's looking down the table. I should order that.
I want to believe that like one of the women like looked Al dead in the face as they ordered some sort of eggplant dish.
Yeah. It's like, you do have these in Italy, don't you?
You heard of it? Yeah.
Man, I should have ordered that. So he's got the charcuterie plate to the head, and I was like, wow. Anyway, that's a food observation. It's been a minute
for you.
It's been a minute. Yeah. No, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't. It's bad for so many reasons for me. But I love to see it. I love to see it.
It's like the one thing I can take a child to a fancy restaurant and put a charcuterie in front of him and he'll eat it.
The whole damn thing.
I'll get the charcuterie.
Oh, want that for the table? No, I want it for me.
It's amazing. This is the change I want to see in the world.
Yeah. It's the right idea, right? Like we really did peak with Lunchables. So why are we trying to move away from that?
Yeah. Let's fancify here with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, as a vegetarian, I am a professional appetizer as entree consumer. So
apps for dinner for is sure. an excellent move. Apps for dinner is an excellent move. I don't nearly lean on often enough.
It's called tapas. Come on. That's a thing.
When you're speaking Spanish in Italy, then you and it says you're speaking Italian, then you're having tapas for dinner.
What is the closest thing to a tapa that I can get on this menu?
Yeah. I want the whole thing.
But you want a massive plate.
Yeah, it's tapas, but big.
Big tapas.
That's the point. Yeah.
I think that's what we call our restaurant when we open it. Big tapas.
Big tapas. I love when you call me Big Tapas.
No, not Big Papas. Big Tapas.
Yeah, I love that.
It's brilliant. Great.
Excellent. Yeah. Our Mall Patrol pizza restaurant, Big Tapas.
It's coming together. Okay, Bribs goes home.
Yeah.
Bribs. Yeah.
The man with the original mole exterminator.
Yeah. Smelled that for a while, but like really smelled it. I think last week I was like, he's just gone next week, right? Like, I think I said something like that. I was like, there's two episodes next week. Bribs is not coming out of this. No way. No chance. Nope. Too pure for this game. But he does leave that original mole killer behind. And my God, do not let that fall into Bill's hands.
He's just going to use it to kill everybody, right?
Yeah. Anderson knife one. Anderson's like, you're a monster. Anderson's like, you murdered them. And Bill says, wasn't that the game?
So unsettling. Oh, God.
This is an angle that I had previously never considered. And now it's like, how did I ever watch this show without it?
You liked it better when he was Charlie, didn't you?
I don't like it better when anybody is Charlie, Charlie.
It was safer when it was Charlie.
Well, not really for women or.
It was a different time back then. Now we're doing
the game has changed.
Hannah Bill Lecter.
Yep. Reinventing the way this game is played.
Hannah Bill Lecter.
Oh my God.
Shut down the podcast.
He's the mole. I'm convinced. I'm relocking it. Bill's the mole. I'm going to stay with Al, but I cannot wait. I cannot wait until Bill is revealed as the mole and he like perp walks out into the like the arena like they did last time and it's freaking Bill, that brick shit house, just strutting out like, oh God.
What's his entry music?
I don't know. It's whatever the stupid Silence of the Lambs theme sounds like. He comes out. He puts the lotion on the skin. It's going to be a nightmare. Anyway.
Maybe he plays Goodbye Horses is his entry music.
Oh, God. Oh, jeez. Oh, man. All right. So that's two episodes of The Mole. And now... we shall quiz. Unless we got feedback.
Not really.
A ton. Just a lot of keep up the good work. We're really enjoying what you're doing here.
Yeah. Well, we got a couple of nice messages, which we always appreciate.
Yep.
We're glad you're out there having a good time. We're certainly having a good time.
Clearly.
But it's and we'll keep having a good time on our own, even if you guys aren't. But yeah, it's nice to know that you're all having fun too.
We kind of do this for our own enjoyment, and the fact that other people also enjoy it is just kind of gravy.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. 100% co-sign on all of that.
It's the dessert after the charcuterie plate.
It's the two desserts.
Apps and dessert. That's great.
It's two desserts after the charcuterie plate.
Yeah.
I'll take the creme brulee and the chocolate lava cake. Thank you very much.
Wow.
Tiramisu.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. They are in Italy.
Wow. You're going to order them both? Are you sharing?
No.
Wow.
Production's paying the bill, dude. And I'm burning the calories off playing their stupid tracker.
Are you leaving any of it behind, or are you cleaning the plates?
I might give somebody a bite.
Yeah.
In exchange for some mole information, but no, it's all for me.
My God. So tasty.
I mean, if somebody else is paying and I know that they have money to burn,
I understand the premise, man. and I agree with it.
Yes. All right. So quiz right. time.
Yes.
Quiz time.
All right. And the format of this week's quiz, I think, is going to be one that is familiar to you because this was actually Sarah Carradine's original idea. And then I sort of ran with it after a while. So she had suggested that we talk a little bit about game shows. And so we're going to talk about some U.S. game shows that are particularly horrible.
Okay.
And I don't
going think, back to our roots here.
Yeah, yeah, like, going back to our roots for sure. And we're going to talk about some international game shows that are also horrible. And then we're going to talk about things that happened on a classic game show. So that's your quiz this week. That's where we're going with this.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to start off with an easy one. This is familiar territory to you. U.S. game shows. Three of these shows are real shows and one of them is a fake show.
Okay.
All right. So your first game show here, it's called Hellevator, and it ran in 2015 on GSN. In this show from Blumhouse Productions, each episode was based on a different mass murderer or urban legend. Teams of four contestants were taken into a haunted house where they would complete challenges based on that week's theme. And contestants would be grabbed, followed, and harassed in nearly pitch black rooms.
It's a real life hell house, Josh.
It is. Poison the Hellevator.
Poison the Hellevator. Okay.
Okay. So show number two, we've got The Chamber, which aired on 2002 on Fox. Literally a torture chamber. Contestants were strapped into the quote unquote chamber. And as they attempted to answer trivia questions, the temperature would soar or plummet. The chair would shake. Oxygen levels would reduce, or an air cannon would blast into their faces.
Oh.
The air cannon would be so disrespectful, I feel like.
It feels to me like this is just a more extreme version of those 4D movies that you go to, like at the zoo.
Where they like spray you with stuff.
Yeah. Like, ooh, the snake is spitting at you. Spray the water. And they do use an air cannon there, but it's like not right on your face.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Russian Roulette, this is 2002 on GSN. In this show, hosted by Antiques Roadshow's Mark Wahlberg, contestants would stand on a giant revolving cylinder. If they answered a question incorrectly, they pulled the lever, which sometimes opened a trap door beneath them.
And where did they go?
Who knows? Away. They went away.
Away.
And finally, we have The Rack, which aired at 2007 on Fox. Contestants were bound to a literal rack and given a series of trivia questions. At the end of the round, they would be stretched incrementally according to the number of questions they'd missed. They were outfitted with a panic button that allowed them to tap out at any time, but if they could withstand the agony for 2 minutes, they won prizes.
That cannot be real.
Yeah, that's not possible.
Like this, like I know
that
we're gonna
pulls your bones apart.
Yeah, I know we're gonna pick this, Zed, and then it's like actually that's real. You know, like is what's gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean they're all pretty nightmarish, but I can't.
But also like at a certain point, Zed, doesn't one of these have to just like out like obviously sound like so implausible that it just has to be like if so that's The Rack, right?
Yes,
like
I agree.
You know, if that's ever gonna happen, it's The Rack. Cause this is crazy. Like you can't like stretch someone apart on TV.
Yeah. Making it hot or cold is not great. Like the chamber one is not great, but it's
Hellevator's
it's survivable.
Real. Hellevator's yeah. for sure real. I think, yes. I think I remember Hellevator.
And Russian Roulette sounds hysterical.
It does.
People falling through a trapdoor is very funny to me.
Is there a show called Russian Roulette? Like, I don't know.
Was it called Russian Roulette or just Roulette?
It was called Russian Roulette.
Russian Roulette, yeah. But The Rack? Why would it? Why? How?
All right, let's find out that we're wrong, but let's pick The Rack. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, we're picking The Rack.
Of course, there is no show about a rack.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Thank God.
It's inappropriate. I mean, calling a show Russian Roulette is already inappropriate. Yeah. But yeah, there was no actual show about a rack. This is my favorite Survivor moment is in Survivor Vanuatu when Jeff Probst is doing like the trivia quiz. And one of the questions is true or false. Some cultures drink a ceremonial cup of lava. and some people answer.
Yeah.
Some people answer through, and Jeff Probst just like dead ass looks in the camera like, if you drank lava, you would die.
Yeah, you can't do the rack.
You like, can't pull people's bones apart.
No, you
like,
not.
Like I know
we'll do anything to get on television.
I know we have covered some strange terrain here in the quiz portions of Mole Patrol, but the rack is the one that, believe it or not, is too far. We can't stretch people apart on television. You just can't do that. It's not a thing you can do.
I feel like the Geneva Convention probably outlawed it centuries ago.
You cannot pull a human apart by their arms and legs on television. You can't do it anywhere.
Yeah, not off television but either, just to be clear.
You for sure cannot do that on TV. Yeah, like web TV.
So Fox, if you're thinking about picking up these fake ideas, don't pick that one up. It's not nice. It's not
a non-starter.
Yeah, the Geneva Convention says no.
Underreported in all of this this hubbub. Zed, we just got a point.
We got a point. Yay! And we logic our way to a point in the universe.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
I finally wrote something so implausible that even you could get it.
Well,
correct.
That's what we were saying. We're eventually something is just so obviously wrong that like we have to pick it. Like I know we've been through hell and back with some of these before, but
elevators and back.
Yeah.
But this is like what you're describing is an imprisonable offense.
Yeah.
Even if you sign a waiver, I feel like you could still prosecute.
You can't. Yeah, they're going to jail.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think you can sign a waiver that says you can do illegal activities to me.
You probably can pull my body apart.
Oh, God. Okay,
so let's talk about some international game shows. And game shows is used kind of loosely here. But okay, so here we have Space Cadets. This is a series that aired in 2005 in the UK. 12 contestants were recruited for what they were told is the UK's first experiment in space tourism. They were sent to a Russian cosmonaut training camp, which was really a decommissioned Air Force base in Suffolk, and made to believe that they were being prepared to go into low Earth orbit for 5 days as they were subjected to increasingly bizarre and surreal tests, culminating in boarding a module that was actually a sophisticated simulator. The project cost £5 million to make.
That's okay. Wow.
So mean. That's so exceptionally mean.
Would you rather go on the rack?
No, the rack is like obviously like you're trying to kill a person, but like this is like really cruel. It's like, hey, we've selected you to go to space. This is like Charlie Bucket, like getting like the golden ticket, and then it's like he goes to the factory, and only to find out that he's in like the Slugworth one, and it's not real. Like that's like what this would be like. Mm-hmm. Not. This is not a kind thing to do. This is like a
This is like
a psychology experiment. This isn't a reality TV show.
I mean, this is the same universe in which we have
the Joe Schmo show.
A social experiment on television?
No way.
What happens at the end? What happens? Do they
exit the module into a soundstage.
And they say, surprise, you didn't go to space.
Surprise, you didn't go to space.
This is like Nathan Fielder's haunted house on Nathan for You, if you haven't seen that one. Where he like, I'm going to make your haunted house really scary. And he makes the people who go through the haunted house think that they've contracted a disease and that they're going to die and they have to go to the hospital. And then there's traffic and then they let them out of the ambulance and surprise, that's the house. Like, you can't do this. This isn't nice.
Do you want to hear the other things that people have done to them?
Yeah.
Okay. So next up, we have Cake Wheel, which aired in 2010 in the Netherlands. I mean, it had a Dutch name, but contestants answered trivia questions and spun a wheel to determine how many bites of cake they must eat before competing in a variety of physical challenges. It gets better. Some of the cake was normal pound cake. but some was laced with Amsterdam's finest THC. Either way, consuming the cake affected their performance.
Oh, that's also not nice. Do they know it's a risk?
Yes, they know it's a risk.
Okay, okay, okay. Then that's nicer. That's nicer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So then we have...
That's hilarious.
So then we have Don't Scare the Hare, which is from the UK also, from 2011. Contestants solved puzzles, completed physical challenges, and performed memory tasks. Completing the tasks successfully earned points in the form of plastic carrots, but messing up resulted in scaring the hare, a large robotic rabbit with creepy animated eyes.
Oh, man.
Okay.
I believe him.
And finally, we have The Very Worst Driver of the Netherlands, which aired in 2011. And again, it had a Dutch name.
Sure.
Yeah. Contestants competed in racing challenges and obstacle courses in an effort to avoid being named the country's worst driver. Iterations of this program have aired in 17 countries, but the Netherlands version was particularly notable because in the finale, a contestant lost control of their car and plowed into the host and a cameraman.
Oh, no.
Wow.
That's not nice either.
That's bad.
It's pretty bad.
What was read the first one again. Space Cadets. I'd like to just hear that again.
12 contestants were recruited for what they were told was the UK's first experiment in space tourism. They were sent to a fake Russian cosmonaut training camp, which was really a decommissioned Air Force base in Suffolk, and made to believe that they were being prepared to go into low Earth orbit for 5 days, as they were subjected to increasingly bizarre and surreal tests culminating in boarding a module that was actually a sophisticated simulator.
Where and when did this air?
2005 in the UK.
I don't think so.
We're like just barely on the brink of space tourism now.
I feel like this is a no. Personally.
Yeah. And extremely expensive.
It's
as you pointed out.
It's so expensive. That's so expensive. I want desperately to believe in cake wheel.
Yeah, I think that's real.
I really want to believe in that. I think that the robot bunny seems like a legitimate thing. But also I'll laugh really hard at the idea of Jess and Sarah having invented a giant robot bunny.
And earning plastic carrots.
Yeah, the earning plastic carrots is a really lovely touch if you guys wrote this. And that will be my favorite part. And then this last one ends on such a dark note that I feel like that's a real fact.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Space Cadets personally, but Zed, yeah. I don't want to overrule it.
No, I think that logic is right. And our logic actually worked for once today. So,
I mean, your logic did not fail you on the first one, but I'm afraid to tell you that you are incorrect. Space Cadets is real.
I want to watch that.
Me too.
That's like Truman Show vibes. Like that's so mean at the end. Anyway, well,
there's a couple of them. There's a This American Life story about this guy that got like locked in an apartment and could only survive on things that he won in contests. Or that was in Japan, of course. And then at the end, like the house falls away and he's on a soundstage, and then they fly him home to his native Korea, and then to get back, he has to do the thing all over again.
Oof.
I got to find that again. I got to listen to that because I think I'm getting some things wrong. But so anyway,
which one was the fake?
Cake wheel. That's fake.
Cake wheel.
I made that up.
Cake wheel's great. Cake wheel's great. Good job.
I was also late to start this podcast because I was watching clips from Don't Scare the Hare.
That's amazing.
Because, Sue Perkins from the Great British Bake Off did all the color commentary on the challenges, which is pretty great.
I love the concept for it, but I'm a little disappointed that cake wheel is gone.
Yeah. Well, somebody that's a freebie and it's we could real, make this.
Yeah, it's a that's very, a fun idea.
It's a very good idea. But we have the live Mole Patrol meetup. Should we play cake wheel?
We have to make up some challenges.
It sounded like in Luca, Jess, you were on the verge of ordering cake wheel dinner, a tiramisu and the lava cake for dinner.
I mean, I would.
Yeah. Spin the cake wheel. What's for dinner? That's the tagline. What's for dinner?
In these troubled times, I feel like every night is cake wheel at my house.
I love it.
These troubled times, every night is cake
everyone wheel. Needs. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to bring us home tonight with a passion project of mine. One of, I think everybody's favorite program here. The Price is Right.
Okay.
If you were ever homesick as a kid, you know what I'm talking about. The Price is Right is a classic game show. And weirdly enough, this is all stuff that's happened pretty much in the last 10 years. So that's fun. We're not even going to the Bob Barker era for all this weird stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. So here we go. We're going to start with 2012. To kick off their first ever Celebrity Week, The Price is Right welcomed guest host Snoop Dogg to play alongside the contestants, providing moral support. Snoop, a lifelong fan of the show, turned out to be something of a Price is Right savant. Thanks to his coaching, 5 of 6 contestants won huge prizes in their games, and the 6th ended up winning the showcase, all while Snoop beamed like a kid in a candy store.
How long was he there for?
The whole episode.
Okay.
Oh, I want that to be true.
I fully believe it. Snoop contains multitudes. Like, yeah, the whole,
pretty
like,
much anything you tell me about Snoop Dogg, yeah, I'll believe, I think.
Like the whole, like his friendship with Martha Stewart and like his partnership with her and stuff. Like, Snoop going on Price is Right and doing all this, like, I buy it for sure.
A great contestant for Cake Wheel.
Awesome. Indeed.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Let's get Snoop on Cake Wheel.
The king of Cake Wheel.
Snoop would kill it on Cake Wheel. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. I'm into that. All right. So our next one, 2019, this happened. When announcer George Gray called for one contestant to come on down, nobody answered the call. After a moment, it was determined that the woman had taken a bathroom break at the worst possible time. Yeah. The audience chanted her name until she finally reemerged, at which point host Drew Carey quipped, "I'd shake your hand, but that's all right."
Vicious.
Uncalled for.
Brutal. Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys couldn't have waited 5 minutes. You had to start the show then and there. And you had to air that. You couldn't
have to air.
You couldn't edit around. That's also mean.
Yeah. I mean, they don't, it's not live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So 2015, to introduce a prize package that included a treadmill, George Gray thought it would be funny to do the spiel while running backward on said treadmill. As soon as he finished the first sentence, he slipped and fell on his ass, smacking his head on the treadmill as he went down. He didn't miss a beat, but he did finish reading the pitch while sitting on the floor in front of the treadmill.
That's great. He's very talented.
Multi-talented George Gray. I mean, he's no Rod Roddy, but he's pretty good. All right. And finally, in 2011, a contestant was so excited to play Plinko that as she went to place her first chip, it flew out of her hand, bounced out of the board, rolled off the stage, and wound up wedged under a chair in the audience. Filming had to be stopped for 20 minutes while the crew retrieved the chip and reset the board.
20 minutes.
Wow. Yeah, I buy that. I don't know. Any one of these could be real. I have no leads here, Zed. I don't know if you've got any strong thoughts.
I believe the bathroom break is real.
Yeah.
And then we have the treadmill. We have the Plinko chip.
And Snoop.
Oh, and Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
2012, Snoop Dogg, is he doing this kind of stuff? I think so.
Who knows? He could be doing anything at any time.
He is doing more of this stuff now, I feel like. But is he starting to like careen towards these kinds of hijinks? I'll stay with Snoop.
Mm-hmm.
So then it would be Plinko or the treadmill.
Yeah. I'm inclined to say the treadmill. But I don't know.
Just gut?
Yeah, just gut.
I got nothing better. I'm fine to run on the treadmill with you. Words that I would never say in any other context.
So we're running with that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, you're incorrect. It is Plinko that is the fake one.
Yeah.
And I want to say, I have a lot of Price is Right trivia. I'm very excited to tell you all about it. There was one that I didn't use here because we had already used the very worst driver of the Netherlands. There's one where one of the spokesmodels is driving a car out to showcase it, and she hits the clutch instead of the brake and crashes into the side of the set.
Oh.
Oh, no.
I mean, she's going like 3 miles an hour, so it's a very slow, but still. The bathroom break thing has happened not just once, but multiple times.
I'm sure. People get nervous.
Yeah. I thought it was weird. Like, when I've been to tapings of TV shows, they don't let you get up and go to the bathroom at any random time. So I thought that was weird. But apparently Price is Right, they're a little more humane.
Yeah.
I guess it's all old people. You have to let them.
I don't know. Are they humane or are they setting you up for a bit so they can embarrass you in front of America?
So are you saying that if you want to be called to come on down, you get up and pretend you're taking an embarrassing bathroom break?
Maybe.
Is that the play?
Maybe.
Yeah, it's like you do at a restaurant when you're waiting for your food to come.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Back in the day when we went to restaurants.
I remember that.
I remember.
Yeah, right, and finally.
Well, we got one. That was good.
Yeah, you got one. Also, I wish that you could still watch the Snoop show online because it is maybe my second favorite piece of television content of all time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it your favorite compared to whatever the hell is coming the next time the Mole Patrol gets together? Because I smell it in the air, whatever this
is coming. I've been like sitting here twitching for 3 months waiting for this to come up.
Everybody has been cool. Everybody continue to be cool. Do not think you are cleverer than you are. We are close. Do not at me about whatever is coming next on the Mole. I don't know. I already feel like I know more than I'd like to. Everyone just can it, you know?
Yeah. Don't take this away from Josh, and don't take this away from us experiencing Josh experiencing.
I have discipline here. I'm not looking around. I'm not watching ahead. I'm going week to week. I've got the mutes. I've got the filters. I've kept it tight.
Yeah,
the world is terrible. Let me have this. And then you will have it too. It'll be great for everyone.
Exactly.
Just be cool. Act in your own self-interest, which I know is a hard thing for a lot of people to do.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Well, we'll be back, and it's going to be 2 weeks. We're taking next week off, so you do have to wait a minute. But then the patrol gets back together. We will get into the final four episode of The Mole Season 2. And then I believe the week after that, we will do the final two episodes of The Mole Season 2 as one shot. Since it's going to be the final three and then the reveal in the next episode, we'll just do it all in one go. So two more recap weeks still to come, plus some hijinks on the other side of that. So Mole Patrol still in it. We're not quite done yet. All right. Well, that's going to start the process of wrapping it up. Send your feedback in molepatrol@robhasawebsite.com. Jess, what do you got going on? Give them plugs.
Oh, I'm the busiest person. I am not, though, because Josh probably did 8 podcasts today, but I'm doing a podcast every night and through Wednesday, and that feels like a lot of podcasts. So we got this going on tomorrow night, and we're going to get together and talk about The Walking Dead, which I have a lot of opinions on this latest episode that aired. So that will be very fun. Chappelle, AJ Mass, hopefully also Josh Wigler will be there.
Not this week, but I am coming
next week
because you're going to be gone.
Yes.
And then I'll be on the week after that for sure. But no, I can't make
someday
it tomorrow.
We'll be together, man.
We will be together again.
Yes. And then we have a project coming up just for the post-show recaps patrons. Grace Leader and I are going to be watching a couple of James Bond movies because James Bond is coming out with another movie again. James Bond is a person.
I love that insinuation that James Bond's like,
James Bond himself is
I love that. James Bond's like, man, it has been a minute since I've done one of these, huh?
I guess I'll make another one.
And this is definitely what James Bond sounds like and talks like. So he's like, all right. I guess I should do another one of these James Bond movies, huh? That's what they like.
David, my name's right on it.
I mean, I should just like print money. I should do it.
Anyway, we polled the listeners, we polled the patrons of Post Show Recaps to see which movie we should kick off with. And unsurprisingly, out of the Connery Bonds, anybody want to guess which one we're going to be watching?
I think I voted for Dr. No, is where I voted.
The public overwhelmingly chose Goldfinger.
Okay.
Which I knew they would.
Yeah.
And it's a good one. We're going to have fun watching that. And then we're going to be recording a podcast recap of that exclusively for the Post Show Recaps patrons. And then eventually, after we've watched a few of these, after we've pulled the audience and had some real feedback, figured out, like gotten our sea legs under us, we may be taking it to the main stage.
Yeah. So we are going to be, have we come up with a name for this yet?
Yeah. Still workshopping it.
Yeah, I liked Jess's suggestion from PSR with love, I think is cute. I like that a lot. But either way, yeah, it's a Post Show Recaps patron exclusive, some James Bond coverage from Jess and Grace Leader. A really great hook that, Jess, you've seen a lot of Bond. I believe Grace has seen like none, right?
That's right. It's similar to this, but with
we love this.
James Bond.
It's a great format.
It's a great format. It's always really fun to be on the voyage of someone's discovery, I think is like a really fun podcast hook. So if you're a big Bond person, this should be up your alley. If you're not, but you love the people who are talking about Bond, it should be definitely up your alley. So give that a listen. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. That's where those podcasts will
September
live.
1st is a great time to sign up.
It is.
That's a good point.
Start of the month. And the 1 year anniversary of the Post Show Recaps patron program is on its way here very, very, very soon in October. So you want to get in ahead of that and be part of the party before that. That would be great. We'd love to have you. Come swing on by. Brooklyn Zed, what do you got going on, my friend?
Mostly hanging out with you, which is a delight. Not a delight is playing Final Fantasy VII Remake on hard mode. But we are just about done with that journey. We're still talking about Final Fantasy VII a little more over on the Final Fantasy Recap podcast on Post Show Recaps. Sundays and eventually on Tuesdays, once again, I play role-playing games at twitch.tv/DMPhilly. Sunday, we play Kings of Neon. It's our City of Mist game at 6 p.m. Eastern. Tuesdays, I think tomorrow you'll catch, or today, as this is dropping, you'll catch Josh in Dragonfly, D&D in Space. And last week, I was on a different D&D stream. I played Total Party Knockout over with Sabotage the DM, our friends across the pond in the UK. You can check them out, twitch.tv/sabotagethedm. We had a lot of fun last week, and that's basically what I'm up to. You can hang out with me on Twitter, where I have video game-induced mental breakdowns.
It'll happen.
And today I posted some cool pictures of some fighting that I did last weekend. So check that out. That's what I'm doing.
Haven't seen that yet. I'll go check that out. You will not find any cool pictures of fighting on my Twitter, but I am at Round Howard. Do not at me about the mole, but please do at me about the grape stomping lady. We will be back not next week, but 2 weeks from now to talk about the next episode of The Mole. It's here. Almost here. Get hype. The moment you've all been waiting for. We'll be back. Take care, everybody. Bye.